You're watching a High Wire Media podcast.
When you think about Maine, this is the 23rd state admitted to the Union, up in the very northeastern corner of the United States. You might think about New England lighthouses, fresh lobster, maple syrup, foliage, rocky coastlines, and little quaint B&Bs. All very pleasant things. But when you think about Maine, you probably don't think about murder, particularly not mass murder. After all, Maine is one of the safest states in the United States. So this week, our case is taking us to one of those quaint B&Bs, the Black Bear Bed and Breakfast, in the small town of Newry, Maine. Now, Newry is in southwestern Maine, close to Maine's western border with New Hampshire, and the Black Bear B&B is right near the Sunday River Ski Resort. This is the heart of Maine ski country. Depending on the season, this area is very popular with skiers and outdoor enthusiasts. It's about 80 miles northwest of Portland, Maine, and about 70 miles west of Augusta, the state's capital. The Black Bear B&B occupies a historic building off Monkey Brook Road in Newry, on Sunday River Road. The Black Bear has a pool out back, inviting lawn areas, and the inn is a painted white clapboard building with maroon shutters and a red metal roof surrounded by woods. The bed and breakfast sits on 8 acres, so essentially just imagine what I picture is the little resort area on Bloodline, and then make it a bed and breakfast. In 2006, Julie Attleberry Newby Bullard is the 65-year-old proprietor of the B&B. But Julie isn't originally from Maine. She was born in Texas on July 22, 1941. Her father was an airline pilot for Pan Am, and while growing up, Julie lived with her family in various cities all over the world. She spent most of her adult life in San Francisco, and that's where she still has a lot of family at this time in 2006. She's a proud mom of 4 adult daughters and a proud grandmother to 9 grandchildren. She loves pets and always has several cats or dogs living with her. For many years, Julie was living in the Bay Area and was busy running an inn there called the Church Street Bed and Breakfast. So it's safe to say Julie's a natural at running these little inns. Her friendly personality is such a good match for this line of work. She's known for going out of her way to take care of her guests, making sure everything is comfortable, and even going to such lengths as running out to get them medicine if they're sick. A news article on sfgate.com quoted Julie as saying about running a bed and breakfast, "Kind of like being a mother. I just hadn't learned to keep a household." However, all of Julie's plans around this time change when tragedy strikes. Julie's son-in-law, her daughter Selby's husband, is killed in a car accident, leaving Selby a single mom with 2 young kids. Julie and her 30-year-old daughter Selby are very close, and Julie wants to do what's best for her daughter and her grandkids. They decide that a fresh start in a new location far away will be the best thing for all of them, including the kids. Which it is really sad. I mean, her husband dies, and then she has to move back in with her mom with the kids. In 2004, Julie sells the inn in San Francisco, packs up, and moves Selby, the 2 kids, and all their pets across the country to Maine. Julie feels safe in Maine, and it seems like the perfect place to run brand new bed and breakfast. And that's how we get to her running the Black Bear Bed and Breakfast. This new adventure in this beautiful new setting will help the family begin the healing process and help them to continue living productive lives. According to the Boston Globe, Julie puts her own eclectic design touches on the new project, and Selby and her 2 kids live in their own place, not far from Julie and the Black Bear Bed and Breakfast. So they all just kind of run away to Maine. They start running this new bed and breakfast in the hopes of a fresh start. In keeping with her new beginnings, Selby, the daughter, decides to earn her real estate license soon after moving. Before moving, she'd have several jobs, including waiting tables, working at a nail salon, and running an eyeglass store. Selby takes a part-time job at Apple Tree Realty in Maine. This is the perfect job for her, as it gives her time to spend with her 2 kids, her 8-year-old son Elliot, and her 12-year-old daughter Leela. Selby, who is described as always smiling, really enjoys her new opportunity at Apple Tree Realty. It's at this office that she meets and makes a new friend named Cynthia Beetson. They are pretty much inseparable. Cindy is like a big sister to her. Selby's new best friend, Cindy, is 43 years old and was born on May 29th in Boston, Massachusetts. Cindy attended the Fashion School of Design in Boston and was active, athletic, friendly, and loved many sports. Cindy had also recently earned her real estate license, like Selby, and began working at Apple Tree Realty. She was described as beautiful and animated. Cindy lived in Bethel with her husband and young daughter. So this new move seems to be going well. Selby moves, starts a new job, then meets her best friend at this job. It's now 2006, and after only 2 years in Maine, Julie, now 65, is facing a tough decision. She has discovered how difficult it is to make it financially as a proprietor of a B&B in Maine. She has tried to make it work, and she really likes living in Maine, but after thinking it through, her plan is to regretfully sell and move in with another daughter who owns a house in Brooklyn, New York. So she's kind of got this one daughter, Selby, established in Maine, but the money just isn't making sense. She's going to sell the inn and move in with another daughter in New York. Julie puts the Black Bear property up for sale in the spring of 2006 with an asking price of $639,000. By Labor Day weekend, though, it still hasn't sold. Julie has been winding down the B&B business and isn't taking on any new guests. However, to try to make ends meet, she's willing to take on longer-term orders. While waiting for the house to sell, she decides to rent to a young local college student named Christian Nielsen. At this point, you have Julie, the owner, living at the inn, Christian, a boarder now living there, one more person living at the Black Bear, a handyman named James Whitehurst. And who is Jimmy? Jimmy is is 50 years old and works as a handyman. About a month before Labor Day weekend, Julie gives Jimmy a free place to stay at the B&B in exchange for him performing some handyman work around the property. The living arrangement is perfect for him. He doesn't have to pay rent, and all he has to do is work around the house. It's Monday, September 4th, 2006, Labor Day. Tourists are in Maine this weekend to enjoy the leaves and a quiet holiday of canoeing and fishing. The last day of the summer tourist season in Maine. By the end of the day, vacationers will be heading out and returning home. However, there are no tourists at the Black Bear Inn. At about 5:30 p.m., the Maine State Police receive a dispatch about a death at the B&B in Newry, Maine. Here we go. State Trooper Dan Hansen gets the call. He drives out in his patrol car to the Black Bear Inn. When he pulls up, he finds three people outside in front of the B&B. You have Christian Nielsen, the boarder, Christian dad's Charles, Christian's stepmother Lee, Charles's third wife. Lee Graham rushes up to Trooper Hansen when he arrives and tells him that her husband Charles have found some bodies outside the B&B. She also tells him that Christian has told his father that he killed some people. Okay. So she has seen bodies and her stepson just admitted to killing people. The trooper sees Christian and his dad sitting together nearby on a bench. He walks over and asks, what's going on? Christian Nielsen takes a look at the trooper's name tag and then casually says, well, I killed some people, Dan. I shut them all. The guns in the house and the tool chest. And that escalated quickly. The trooper can't help but notice that Christian Nielsen's parents are caked with mud and blood. So not just Christian, but the parents as well. Yeah, that is weird. The trooper asks Nielsen, when did this happen? He replies, a while ago. At this point, Trooper Hansen is dealing with something incredibly rare. Most officers will never experience something like this in their entire career. But he handles it professionally. He reads Christian his Miranda rights and places him under arrest. Trooper Hansen asks Nielsen if he'd like to talk. Nielsen says yes, but he tells the trooper he's only going to tell the story once. Trooper Hansen, wanting to wait for homicide detectives to arrive to hear the story, and any confession Nielsen might make, wisely chooses not to ask any further questions. Instead, he handcuffs Nielsen, places him in the police car, turns on the video recorder inside the vehicle. At this point, Nielsen's dad, Charles, talks to his son through the police car window and makes a comment about whether Christian should wait to talk to a lawyer. Christian responds, yeah, that's not a bad idea. The trooper reminds Nielsen that it's up to him whether he talks to the police or not. Nielsen repeats that he'll only talk to detectives. Trooper Hansen knows it might take homicide detectives a while to arrive in this small town, so in the meantime, he needs to figure out exactly what happened. How many victims there are? Does anyone else need to be arrested? And does anyone need help? But also, why are the parents covered in blood and mud? Right? Like, that's weird. Trooper Hansen asks Charles to describe exactly what he found. Charles leads the trooper along a trail of blood across the grass to some brush on the B&B's property. The trooper comes upon two freshly dismembered bodies in the brush. It's the bodies of two women. They've been left in what's described as bloody heaps. Along with the human bodies are the bodies of two or three dogs who have also been killed violently. At this point, the trooper still doesn't know how many victims there are. The trooper goes back to the police car and asks Christian Nielsen, saying, quote, I know you invoked your rights and you want to speak to counsel, but I need to ask you this question. Is there any chance that there's anyone here alive? I don't want to leave someone out there bleeding. Nielsen responds, no, everyone's dead. At this point, Charles tells the troopers that his son, there are a total of 4 victims, but so far, the trooper has only seen 2. Charles then tells the trooper that 3 of the victims are at the B&B, but 1 is in the town of Upton. But this isn't just on property, there's another body somewhere else. Trooper Hansen is still trying to piece together how many victims there are and where they might be. Charles Nielsen tells the trooper that the 4th body is located in Upton, Maine. The trooper asks Christian and his father for directions to where the body can be found. However, Hansen can't leave the crime scene to go investigate. He's still the only officer on the site, and he has a murder suspect in custody. At about 6 p.m., Game Warden Norm Lewis arrives at the Black Bear Inn to assist Trooper Hansen until more backup can arrive. At this point, Hansen is still talking to Nielsen through the window of the police car. The trooper asks the Game Warden if he knows Brown Company Road in Upton, because that's where the 4th body is supposed to be. Charles suggests asking Christian for more specific directions, but Trooper Hansen refuses. He doesn't want to risk Nielsen shutting down before homicide detectives arrive. Because remember, Nielsen said he'd only tell this story once. Hansen wants to make sure detectives are there to hear it firsthand. Now that the Game Warden is there to assist, Trooper Hansen goes to check out the rest of the crime scene. Following the information given to him, he searches the Black Bear property about 50 yards from the first 2 bodies. That's where he finds a tarp. Underneath the tarp, he finds another body. It's another woman's body. Like the others, this body is dismembered. In fact, it has been cut in half. While Trooper Hansen is investigating the scene, Game Warden Lewis is keeping an eye on Christian Nielsen at the police car. At some point, Nielsen casually says to his dad that the police won't be able to find the 4th body in Upton because he burned it. And without even being asked, Nielsen gives Lewis directions for where the burned body can be found. So it's literally just confessing like this is no big deal. It's 7:30 p.m., 2 hours after Trooper Hansen first got the call, a detective from the Maine Criminal Investigations Division arrives at the scene. Her name is Detective Jennifer King. At this point, Christian Nielsen...
Wow, what's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Is still handcuffed in the back of the police car. Detective King asks if Nielsen will consent to an interview at the Newry Fire Station. Nielsen agrees, so officers drive him to the station. Once they arrive at the fire station, detectives take off Nielsen's handcuffs, let him use the bathroom, give him a sandwich, let him change into clean clothes, and remind him again of his Miranda rights. This entire interview is 2 hours long and recorded on audio tape. Nielsen doesn't hold back when he's talking. Saying, quote, we're talking about dead people, okay? Is that something you want me to talk about? I'll tell you exactly what happened. Then he confesses in gruesome detail to the mass murder. He describes how he killed 4 people, dismembered their bodies, and burned one of them to ash. Here's the horrific story Christian Nielsen tells detectives. On Thursday, August 31st, 2006, Nielsen decides he's going to kill Jimmy Whitehurst. Why Jimmy? No reason. Nielsen claims he wanted to kill someone for years, and he finds Jimmy to be objectionable, whatever that really means. So Nielsen goes to a local gun store, buys a .38 caliber handgun and ammunition. His plan is to kill Jimmy. On Friday, September 1st, 2006, the first day of Labor Day weekend, Nielsen invites Jimmy to join him for an afternoon of lunch and fishing. He tells Jimmy he has a cabin out in Upton. Jimmy, completely unaware, accepts the invitation. The two drive out 15 miles from the Black Bear Inn to a remote wooded area near the Maine, New Hampshire state line. They stop at Subway, where Nielsen buys Jimmy a sandwich. They arrive at a clearing in the woods. As Jimmy eats his sandwich, Nielsen pulls out his gun, sneaks up behind Jimmy, shoots him in the back of the head, execution style. Jimmy never sees a gun, and Jimmy never sees it coming. To make sure he's dead, Nielsen shoots Jimmy twice more. Then he leaves the body there and drives away. What does he do next? He goes to work that night. Nielsen goes to Sud's Pub at the Sudbury Inn to work as a cook. He just killed someone and now he's cooking people's food? How the hell does a person do that? The next day, Saturday, September 2nd, 2006, Nielsen returns to the woods to dispose of Jimmy's body. His plan is to bury Jimmy in an unmarked grave, but as he starts digging, he realizes something. Digging a grave is hard, it's time consuming, it's physically exhausting. So he decides he doesn't want to bury Jimmy anymore. Instead, he'll burn him. Nielsen pours gasoline over Jimmy's body and lights it on fire. But then he takes it a step further. He dismembers Jimmy's body while it's burning, hacking it apart to help it burn faster. He stays there until there's nothing left. Then he leaves the scene. The next day, Sunday, September 3rd, 2006, Nielsen realizes something. Julie is going to get suspicious when Jimmy doesn't come home. She lives at the B&B with them. Of course she's going to notice Jimmy is missing. And Julie is the kind of person who would call the police. So in order to cover up Jimmy's murder, Nielsen decides to kill Julie too. He peeks into her bedroom window. Julie is asleep. Nielsen walks inside. He kicks down her bedroom door. Julie wakes up in confusion and terror, but before she can react, Nielsen opens fire. He shoots her multiple times in the chest. The bullets knock her out of bed and into the wall. And what does he say later? He thought it was awesome. After murdering Julie, Nielsen drags her body outside, cuts her in half using a hacksaw and axe. Once he's done butchering her, he covers her body with a tarp. Then he goes to work. Again, he just killed and dismembered someone and then casually clocks in for a shift. The fuck is wrong with this guy? So now, it is a Labor Day, Monday, September 4th, 2006. Julie's daughter, Selby, is starting to get worried. She's been calling her mom all day, but Julie isn't answering her phone. This is not like her. Julie has severe asthma, and Selby starts to panic. What if something happened to her? Since she can't get in touch with her mom, Selby decides to drive over to the B&B to check on her in person. But remember, Selby has a broken leg at this point, so her best friend Cynthia offers to drive her. The two women arrive at the Black Bear Inn completely unaware that Julie is already dead. Christian Nielsen is inside. When they pull up, he hears the car and starts to panic. Selby and Cynthia walk inside. Selby immediately notices something isn't right. She walks upstairs to her mother's bedroom. The door has been kicked down. Inside the room, there is blood everywhere. Selby's stomach drops. She yells downstairs to Nielsen, "What happened to my mom?" Meanwhile, Cynthia is still downstairs, talking to Nielsen, unaware of what Selby just discovered. Hearing Selby's panicked screams, Cynthia starts running upstairs to check out her friend. Nielsen follows behind her, and then he pulls out his gun. With Cynthia walking in front of him, he raises the gun, shoots her in the back of the head. Selby watches it happen, helpless. Before she can react, Nielsen turns the gun on her, shoots her in the head too. Just like that, a mother and her best friend are dead. After killing Selby and Cynthia, Nielsen drags their bodies outside. He then grabs the chainsaw he borrowed from his dad. He cuts their fingers off and removes their rings. He puts their severed fingers in his duffel bag, along with their jewelry. Detectives later ask why he did this. Nielsen claims he just wanted to steal their jewelry. But instead of just taking the rings off, he decided to cut their fingers off entirely. At some point, he also kills three dogs on the property. After murdering and butchering four people, Nielsen calls his dad, Charles. He tells him, "Julie is away in California, so I'm running the bed and breakfast now." He tells his dad that Julie put him in charge of the inn. Did he actually think this would work? Some reports say that Nielsen invited his dad over to the B&B after making the call. Other reports say that Charles and his wife Lee showed up on their own because the call sounded suspicious. Either way, they drive over to the Black Bear Inn. Charles and Lee pull up to the B&B at around 5:30 p.m. As soon as they arrive, they see something disturbing. A long, fresh trail of blood leading into the grass outside the house. They follow the blood trail and find the bodies of two women. Charles confronts his son. Lee calls 911, not once, but twice. The first time, she reports, "My husband found a dead body and we think my stepson is responsible." Then she calls back again to say, "It's not just one body, there are at least four," and Christian says he killed them all. This is where we pick back up with Christian Nielsen's arrest and confession. Once detectives begin their investigation, Nielsen himself leads them to the burning remains of Jimmy Whitehurst in Upton. At the exact location, Nielsen points out, forensic experts find a fire pit and ashes containing human bone fragments. Forensic anthropologists later confirm that these remains belong to Jimmy Whitehurst. Back at the inn, investigators search Nielsen's car, the B&B property, and the Black Bear Inn itself. And they recover the murder weapon, a .38 caliber gun he bought just days earlier, bullet casings, the woman's jewelry, and bone fragments. Even though Nielsen confessed, detectives comb every inch of the property just in case he tries to claim insanity. They want as much evidence of premeditation as possible. So who the hell is this guy? Investigators dig into Christian Nielsen's background, and this is what they found. He was born May 2, 1975 to Charles and Patricia Nielsen. The parents divorced when he was 5 years old, messy custody battle. Father wins custody after claiming his mother was emotionally unstable. His mother's boyfriend had a criminal history and had been in and out of state prison for burglary. Nielsen attended Nielsen graduated high school in 1991. He attended the University of Maine, but never earned a degree. He had a DUI, lost his driver's license the year before the murders. People who knew him would describe him as moody, unpredictable, aimless, but also kind of smart. The owner of a bookstore in Farmington said Nielsen was a frequent customer. The owner of the Sudbury Inn, where he worked as a cook, said he was reliable, soft-spoken, and quiet. I was shocked that this happened. So there was no warning signs, no history of violence, and he suddenly turned into a mass murderer. So, on September 5th, 2006, the day after his arrest, Nielsen is formally charged with 4 counts of murder. At his arraignment, he smirks in court. At one point, he goes on a hunger strike, losing 55 pounds before being put on a feeding tube. His lawyer tries to argue insanity, but a judge rules that he is competent to stand trial. Ultimately, Nielsen pleads guilty to all 4 murders, and on October 18th, 2007, he is sentenced to life in prison. He has never shown any remorse. After Christian Nielsen's sentencing, the families of the victims were left to pick up the pieces of their shattered lives. Perhaps the most heartbreaking impact of this tragedy was on Sylvie Bullard's children. They already lost their father in a car accident just 2 years earlier. Now they lost their mother and their grandmother in one of the most brutal crimes Maine has ever seen. Selby's 10-year-old son, Elliot, wrote a victim impact statement titled, "How My Life Changed and I Was Forever Wounded." Can you imagine? All 4 of Nielsen's victims left behind grieving children and families. Julie had 4 daughters and 9 grandchildren. Selby left behind her 2 children. Cynthia Beetson left behind a husband and a child. And Jimmy, the handyman, had his own family and loved ones. And for what? There was no real reason for these murders. Nielsen didn't have a personal vendetta. He didn't try to cover his tracks. He just wanted to kill. After the murders, the Black Bear Bed and Breakfast remained vacant for some time. In 2009, new owner sought permission to convert the building into 4 condos, stating that it was too difficult to continue renting it out as a bed and breakfast. Yeah, no one's going to stay at a place where 4 people were brutally murdered. If anything, it's surprising they didn't just tear it down. So as of today, Christian Nielsen is currently incarcerated at Maine State Prison, serving out his life sentence. He still has not shown any remorse for what he did. When asked why he committed these murders, he had no real explanation other than the fact that he had been obsessed with killing someone for years. Even in court, he remained emotionless. Judge Robert Crowley, when he was pronouncing the sentence, said, quote, "When all is said and done, Christian Nielsen has committed 4 of the worst criminal acts in recent Maine history." According to New York Times, officials described Nielsen's 4-day murder spree as a crime of horrific proportions. It was the largest multiple homicide in Maine since a Portland arson fire killed 4 people 14 years earlier. So basically, this was one of the worst crimes Maine has ever seen. Julie Bullard had moved to Maine for a fresh start. She wanted a safe, peaceful place to run her bed and breakfast and be near her daughter. Instead, she was murdered in her sleep, dismembered, and left under a tarp in her own backyard. Sylvia and Cynthia died simply for showing up at the wrong time. Sylvia because she loved her mother and wanted to check on her, and Cynthia because she was a good friend driving her there. Jimmy was just a handyman trying to get by, staying at the B&B in exchange for work. All 4 of these victims had full, rich lives before they were senselessly taken away. Their families will never get closure because there is no real answer for why this happened. And Christian, he will spend the rest of his life in prison. But no amount of life sentences will ever make up for the 4 beautiful lives he took. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms. Hit the subscribe button down below. Hit the bell notification button to be notified of future videos. And give us a thumbs up if you like our videos. And of course, if you want to be a financial supporter of this channel, you can buy us a copy at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, your support helps the channel grow, upgrade our equipment, bring in new hosts, be able to pay them, and take this show on the road. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We will see you next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. We ask that you kindly not be that guy, and instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone from their top brands in any condition on any unlimited plan for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 with Galaxy AI. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.